You are now tuned in to the Humane Roundup Podcast with your hosts,
Ashley Bishop
and Daniel Ettinger. You know, that never gets old for me.
Every time. It's like every time it's a different intro and...
But that's how people know they're listening to a new episode. This is episode 148. That's a lot.
Did you actually count
them? Anyway. Yeah, I went back and counted them just to keep track because, yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll do
something special. How many other people's fingers and toes did you have to use?
A lot. 148. That's a lot.
148 people? So they each only had one finger and...
Well, if you divide that, you're ridiculous. All right, here we go. What we're going to do today, we're going to jump in. We're going to get an update from Code 3 Associates and Code 3 Coalition with Janae Boswell. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you today?
We're good.
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 Yeah, we're
always nice to hear your voices.
Oh, it's nice to hear your voice, even though you're a little under the weather.
Yeah, well, plow through though, right? That's what we do.
No days off, right? That's
ever.
We just keep it moving every day.
Absolutely.
Well, we appreciate you still making it today, and I know that you know, you're not 100%, but your 50% is still most people's 100%. So
we'll take it. Well, thank you.
Very sweet
so
of you.
So we just wanted to check in. You know, we love getting updates from Code 3, and just wanted to see how things were going. The coalition seems to be really going well. We had two officers from our department go and take a training, and they really enjoyed it. So good job awesome. With getting that all squared away.
I'm jealous.
Well, we've been busy, and I can't remember when we last talked because this has been a hectic year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've just been packed with various training classes. Two of our instructors did a whole run down to Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, providing some disaster training down there, which went really, really well. And of course that was, my apologies, guys. That was right on the heels of the hurricane. So they went and deployed, and then they went, bounced right into training and got that done. But everything has been really going well. Our East classes are starting to pick up the in-person part again, which has been nice. You know, I think everybody feels the impacts of COVID, but we certainly did with the in-person aspect of training, and that's going well now. We're really starting to see an increase in that, and just trying to do some other engagement with the ACO Coalition. So any input you guys could provide or suggestions you could offer, that would be amazing because I would like to do some new things with them too.
Well, thank you. I have a pipe dream, and you and I can talk offline about it because I don't want to give away our secrets. So, but it may be something the coalition can support in some aspects it's obviously animal control related. So we'll talk offline. I'll shoot you a message and see what
absolutely,
we can get on
that.
But I think from a public standpoint, I think, you know, the coalition's doing great. I mean, it's good to see, you know, just the support in the community from training, from, you know, shouting out people and giving people, that's what I see. I see it as like giving people an opportunity to be heard in some aspects too.
Yeah, absolutely. And we did, you know, kick off our blog post this year. And unfortunately, this summer, I've just been too busy to get stuff up and running. But as always, if anybody has something to contribute to the blog, and it can be anything from like funny stories to information to training type curriculum. I know, Daniel, you and Ashley both contributed, which I greatly appreciated, and totally different aspects of the blog, but they both were really entertaining and well received.
That's good to hear.
You know, something for our listeners that I've recently, because I don't have any of the large animal rescue stuff, and I've been trying really hard to get my supervisors, but I went to my supervisor the other day with an idea, and we haven't reached out to them yet, but an idea for other people out there in case, you know, you're sitting there going, I don't have a budget for training. How do I get to some of these trainings through Code 3? Our emergency management team at one point in time had asked me about large animal rescues and things like that, as far as, you know, a horse in a hole or whatever.
Yeah.
And I went to my supervisor and I said, well, the emergency management for the county should have their own training budget, right? And she thought about it and she's like, yeah, I bet you that they do. And I said, well, maybe we could somehow do the training through them, because I feel like they will have more in their budget than I will. Because like I said, I'm like, I'm not going to go save a horse out of a hole by myself. Like,
yeah,
that's physically not possible.
That's not a solo mission for sure. No.
And so that's an avenue we're going to explore to utilize their funding instead of mine. So just a thought for other people out there that are like, man, I don't know how to make any of this happen. Look at other avenues for it too.
That's a great suggestion, Ashley. And we actually did that here in Colorado. We have a big group called the North Central Region Urban Security Initiatives. And they get a lot of federal money even every year. Ooh. And my apologies, guys. And they actually funded two big classes here in Colorado. And it was just that it was large animal rescue, like behavior as well as the rescue ops. And so yes, that certainly is a great thing that you point out, that your emergency management probably does have the funds.
They just have to really know where to put it. Exactly. Well, that's just it. And so I love how Code 3 has some, they do focus on that large animal stuff, you know, every year. Is it every year they go down to the, is it Durango, Janae?
Yeah. So that's our big Equine Investigation Academy, but yeah, okay, 2 times a year. So we have level 1 and level 2.
I need to go to that.
You do need to go to that. It's so much fun. So that's that's our in residence program. And you actually stay on site, and it is like a working ranch, and it is in depth and just intense. So from about 7:30 in the morning, you get up, they feed you breakfast, and then you go and hit the books, and you're learning all day and tons of hands-on equine stuff. And it's phenomenal. It's really a cool experience. We do require that you take level 1 before level 2. And level 1 is always in August. And I think I even might have a date here for you.
Oh, well, then I'm going to have to put that on the training budget.
August. Yes, you need to.
It's not too far of a drive from where we're at, probably like 5 hours. So,
yeah, it's not bad. And so this year, level 1 is August 21st through 26th, and level 2 is May 22nd through 27th.
So that's 2023. I mean,
oh, or was that 2020? No.
Well, August is already past, Dan.
Well, I didn't know if she was talking for the future or if it was...
Yeah, for the future. Yeah. Okay. So it's like that last week in May and the last week in August. And it actually, so people come in on Sunday, because we do start first thing on Monday morning. And I mean, you learn all sorts of stuff, anatomy, care, nutrition, body condition scoring, the whole kit and caboodle. It's really cool. And then we go all the way through Saturday morning, where we have final testing. And that's like hands-on stuff. It's really cool. It's a lot of fun. If you haven't been, I suggest you go.
I definitely want to look into that. I hear great things about it. And I know it's just in our backyard. So yeah. Bishop, maybe you should make a road trip.
Yeah.
I would love to. Again,
August 2023.
My training budget doesn't allow me to go anywhere that I can't drive to.
You could drive here. It just take you 2.5 days.
Yeah. Except for Texas. But that's a whole different thing.
Well, Janae, we don't want to keep you too long. I know you're not feeling the hottest. What do you got going on the rest of the year for Code 3? Is there a few trainings before the year ends?
We do. So we currently have our online fire training scheduled, and that'll be scheduled for November 30th. And that is an online class that people can just hop on and, you know, it's like a webinar, but interactive. So we like people to engage in that training. And then we have several more East classes running, and I think that pretty much rounds out our year, you know, keeping our fingers crossed that there's no more disasters.
Yeah. Speaking of disasters, can you give an update on Code 3's involvement in Hurricane Ian?
So sure. We had responded out there at the, we have an MOU with one of the agencies out there. And so they had requested us. And so we responded with a couple of teams, and we were there on the ground for 7 days. We ended up doing about 6 days of boat operations. And then, you know, we kind of split our teams up to assist other local agencies as well. And so we assisted them with moving shelters and, you know, moving a co-located shelter with Red Cross and dispersing food. And then just going and checking on a lot of livestock this time around. So making sure that they had food, you know, and hopefully get some of them to dry ground if we could. There were some horses that we just couldn't get to dry ground. And the water was so swift, we couldn't get them out of there. So we just made sure that they were safe and had food and water. And then we just checked on them daily. And then the water receded and they're good.
Okay.
But it was you know, a nice deployment. Unfortunate, you know, we always hate that we have to deploy, but we appreciate the opportunity to go in and help people and their pets. So that was nice.
It's great that there's, you know, groups like you and others that can go and help those animals, because and I even saw the call you put out. Well, I don't want to say call, but there was the email saying that we can use ACO help. And it's just a quick form that you fill out, and then you're either approved. Like, how does that work? Can you just give a quick, like, just update on if somebody does see that email from the coalition, how do they get involved, and how does it work as far as like logistics?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we received was a request for more animal control officers. So we went ahead and sent out that email to our coalition members. And what we ask is that you receive authorization from your agency prior to filling out that form. So if your agency says, yes, we absolutely can support you going, then great. Go ahead and fill out the form. And then what we do in that form, we may recontact you just to get some more clarifying questions. So it's a pretty quick form to fill out. But what we're really wanting to know is, you know, are you going to be able to drive and like bring a work truck with you? Or is it something where you're going to have to fly in? Are you going to be able to have some equipment or not? And then what we do is we match you up with the agency that requested you. So then we give them the list and say, hey, these people already have prior authorization from their agency. These are the people that can bring vehicles and equipment, or these are the people that cannot. And then that way they can pick and choose who they need.
And just, I guess, to clarify this part. So when you say that your agency is willing to support, is that the agency, your own agency then covering costs for travel?
So they may have to on the front end. Most of the time we try to avoid that. Okay. So most of the time we try to have the responding agency see if they can cover that.
Okay.
But you would need the support of your agency, because it would be like an MOU type situation. So say the same type of thing is if somebody from a neighboring jurisdiction needs my help, I would then be covered under my workers' comp.
Mm. Got it.
If something were to happen. And so, you know, that's why we ask that your agency's on board with you going out there.
What's the quickest turnaround though? Cause it feels like, you know, it just feels like it's an emergency. You need to be there tomorrow. Like, can this be a 3-day thing? Like how
it
long?
Can. Will it?
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, it totally can. So, and even in this last request, one of the agencies was asking for like days down the road. So they're like, okay, about 7 days out, we need 3 ACOs for like a 4-day deployment. So, you know, sometimes, you know, they're planning for their operational periods. And so hopefully they're on top of it and not saying, oh, geez, we need, you know, five people yesterday. Hopefully they have enough support to get them through this request and so we can get people in play.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Janae, as always, you're the best and we appreciate your time, especially when you're not feeling great. Bishop, you got anything else before we let her jump off?
I mean, I could have tons of things, so.
All right. Well, we'll just get her back. 2020.
Exactly.
2023 is not too far away, so we'll make sure, you know, I'll make you a hot toddy and send it up there to your house.
Oh,
I
appreciate that. It will be enjoyed.
I'll Uber Eats a hot toddy to you. I don't know if you can do that. Hey, Uber, take this up there. We'll feel better. We always appreciate you coming on and just giving us updates on Code 3, the coalition, and everything that's going on. So thank you for your time today.
Of course. Thank you guys so much. And it's always great.
Bye. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
All right, Bishop, that was cool. I like doing that in the beginning of our episode. Now we can just jump right into some other stuff. How you been?
Good. Been busy. I mean, that's pretty usual, though. How are things over by you? Because you just traveled.
Yeah, you know, I got a shout out. NCARCA. I think I said it right. If y'all are listening, you know it. So that is their acronym. And I'm going to pull it up. It is the North Carolina Rabies. Now I'm going to mess this up. Don't judge me. North Carolina Animal and Rabies Control Association. So I went to the 46th annual training. It's cool to see
how
many years they've been doing that. And this one was in Wrightsville Beach, just outside of Wilmington, North Carolina. And I'm not just saying this to say this. It was probably one of the best conferences I've been to in a long time. And I, you know, and I hate saying it like, well, I go to conferences all, like I do get to, I think, you know, it's truly a blessing that I get to go and go around and see some of these other conferences and meet all these people. And I'll be honest, they did a great job, you know, and I'm not just saying that 'cause I won bronze in the ACO Olympics, you know, but you know, they put on an ACO Olympics, like they made it seem like everybody was like appreciated and they wanted people to be able to like hang out and network and get, you know, like, 'cause that to me, that's part of the whole thing. Like going to class is great, learning new things, but then that downtime when you can talk to your peers about what they're doing, it was really cool. I really appreciated that conference.
That's awesome.
You and I got one coming up.
We do.
Are you ready?
I am. However, I spoke to Jamie recently, and I'm a little bit worried attending your class because him and I are both like, does Dan have something up his sleeve?
Why would I have something up my sleeve? What are you talking about?
I don't know. It's you.
I never ever do that. I'm a reputable instructor. I just have fun with it. It's all good. You'll enjoy it, Texas. And for those of you that are listening, you know, I think it's important that, you know, sometimes we only go to our state conferences, and which makes sense, right? You get the training budget from your department. Like you don't have the ability to travel, but you know, if say you're like your department has a few bucks left and you're able to travel to Texas, it's the 13th through the 16th in San Marcos. And it's a great place. It really is. I've been grateful. And again, I feel I've used that word a few times today, blessed to be, you know, going back for, I think this is my seventh time. So they do an amazing conference. Again, it's similar to what I was talking about with NCARCA. And I think TACA is a better acronym, though. No disrespect to NCARCA, however y'all say it. NCARCA, I love y'all, but I don't know how to say your acronym. But, you know, Texas Unites, man. Or not Texas Unites, that's a different one. Mm-mm, Texas, that's a different one. Texas Animal Control Association puts on a great one. And, like, last year we got to meet frickin', what's her name? You know what I'm talking about. Yep. We had her on the show episode.
Hey, you all cool cats and kittens.
That's the one. Yeah, we met her and her husband, her current husband. For those of you
well, we're not attention. Sure who the other one is.
So anyway, like they, you know, they also do a great job. Like they do ACO Olympics. They do fun stuff too. So if you are in the area or if you can travel to San Marcos, I highly recommend going to that training. And you won't be disappointed. You'll see the Humane Roundup podcast there. You'll see the Texas or Humane Educators of Texas there. I mean, it's a great get up. It really is.
You know, and looking at their itinerary and stuff, there's only one class that is very much Texas specific.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could be from another state. And I reached out to my state veterinarian who does all my CE and stuff. And she's like, yeah, no, you're good to go. I will count all of the credits for you. I even was able to explain why I wanted to participate in the Texas specific one. It's regarding their legislation and stuff. And I said, I wanted to bring back ideas home of things that we might be able to do. So she was all for all those trainings. So you don't have to be from Texas to go.
And I think you bring up such a valuable point, right? Is the training. And that's why I think they're so great as far as the courses they put on, is because they make it sure they have stuff that may be relatable to Texas, but it can still be brought back to any agency. And so, you know, having that legislation stuff, like you said, it's going to give you a better idea or understanding on what to look for when you're maybe making some changes in Wisconsin, right? And or mm-hmm. if someone's coming, let's say someone's coming from Louisiana, that's not too far. I mean, shoot, Colorado's not that far, right? Like we can, you know, for us, it's really like two states away. And so, you know, like, I don't know, I think it's really important. And training, I just think training in general is just such a great way to like, obviously continue education, but like to meet people. Like you're going to go down there, you know, and you're going to meet people that are just like what you're doing in Wisconsin, but just a different, you know, different state. They don't have to deal with the winters.
I'm not looking forward to that. Well, actually I am. It's a little bit slower around here for me. So hopefully I can work on my state organization during the winter. I think that is one of the biggest things that I'm looking forward to, is meeting people, talking to people, creating those networks and that relationship with others that I can reach out and be like, hey, I've got this thing going on. What would you do? Or how many times, Dan, have I reached out to you and said, hey, I know you have this ordinance. Can you share it with me so that I can take it back to my people and, you know, things like that?
Too many. I'm like, just Google it.
But like having those other people to reach out to is huge.
Well, and that's just it. Like we're such a small community, and I was pumped. I made friends this last trip in North Carolina. Like, and I tend to do that pretty much every, you know, conference I go to. I still talk to people from Texas all the time. Like we'll chat, you know, obviously the Tabitha and Kelly, we've remained a great friendship. And then I have some other friends too from Texas that, you know, we'll chat occasionally as well. So I just think it's a great opportunity for us as a community to continue to build and, you know, share ideas, and we have like, you know, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like-minded. Yes. And so being able to like talk about these horrible situations, people really respect. And you'll like the class that I'm doing. And I'm actually really excited because this will be the first time I'm doing this class. And I just think it's so important when we talk about dog bites, cat bites, scratches, what is the difference? And have, you know, are we sometimes miss what's the word?
Identifying.
Thank you. You're like my dictionary, but we are, I guarantee you there's been times where you've called a scratch, a bite, just because the person was so freaked out and they didn't know. Right. Mm-hmm. And so this will give you a better idea of how to really conceptualize bites and how to identify them, et cetera. It's, you know, we had last episode, we had Jim Crosby on, who's an expert at, you know, dangerous dog investigations, dog death, et cetera. And I just think that, like, having this specific training, and I've never seen anything like that before, where it's like, let's talk about, like, sure, we can talk about bites, and we're going to break down the Dr. Ian Dunbar scale. I mean, there's going to be some stuff that people may be familiar with, but then there's going to be some new stuff there, and there's going to be a lot of pictures. So hopefully it's not before lunch or after lunch. I mean, it's before lunch, so hopefully people aren't too squeamish, but I would think people in our profession.
Yeah, you can't really be squeamish in this profession, so.
You can't.
I have a story about somebody who was a little squeamish.
Let's hear it. We got time, yo.
I had to go do an agency assist, and the agency I was helping is a sheriff's department. So they're sworn deputies, but a couple of them have taken on the humane officer role. And we had some deceased puppies that were in garbage bags out in the sun at the end of the road.
I can smell that already.
Right. And he had already been gagging in the house when we were dealing with the house that's, you know, absolutely covered in feces and urine and stuff. And I finally just looked at him and I'm like, you stand back there, put your Zoom on, you can take photos. I will manipulate the bags and move them around because I'm not going to have you yakking all over this. I'm like, I'm only wearing the mask because I don't want the flies in my mouth. Mm. And at the end, he's like, oh my God, thank you. Thank you so much. Because mm-hmm. they'd been out there for a little bit. They were gross.
Is there anything in our profession that you don't want to see or can't see? Like, that just is something that, like, so I'll just rephrase that. I was training several years ago, and we had an officer that was just so excited to see a dead body. I don't think they've ever saw one. And they came from another agency for like 2 years, or they were with that agency for 2 years. And, you know, some people might find it as like being disrespectful to the body. And I get that, especially like imagine the family hearing this officer, like, I want to go in. Can I go in? Can I go see the body? I want to go. I want to go. I want to go. Right. Like, they had no reason to go in there.
Right.
However,
but there's still that, there's still some of that excitement and adrenaline that goes with it.
Well, and okay. So part of it is, without being disrespectful to the body, like, I don't think they were like lifting up arms and moving it. I think it's really important from a standpoint of like our profession, you have to be able to deal with that. Cause let's be honest, how many times have you removed an animal that is literally running back and forth over the dead body?
I've helped remove the dead body.
So, right?
Yeah, no, or eaten the dead body.
And so you have to be able to deal with those moments. Yeah. So my question is, like, for you, is there like a taboo situation that you're like, I can't go in there? Or are you pretty good? Are you able to just be like, you know what, I'm going to have to suck this one up and make it happen?
I'm pretty good. And I think a lot of that comes from, I mean, I've been doing this specific job for 9 years, but I've been in animal welfare for almost 20.
Yeah.
I worked at the Humane Society. So we saw all the nasty things come in to begin with. I worked at a vet clinic where we had living dogs come in with matted hair so bad that we could hear something, and we finally clipped the dog and sure enough, there's maggots. And so I have seen everything. I've participated in surgeries. Couple years ago, I get into work and I got called immediately. Hey, we had a dead body out in one of your other jurisdictions and there's animals in the house. We need you to go immediately. And I show up and I know that they'd been on scene for several hours and I've seen plenty of dead bodies at this point. And I get in the house expecting that the person had been already picked up by the coroner and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they weren't. Well, we deducted based on decomposition and condition of the animals and other things that she had been dead in her house with her three cats and two dogs for about a month.
Mm.
And it's 3 days before Halloween. And I kid you not, when I walked in, I thought I was looking at a Halloween decoration because literally everything except for her abdomen was skeletonized.
Oh, wow.
Everything. The animals had eaten her down and, you know, decomposition and stuff. And the only thing left was her abdomen. And there was like full on bones from the elbow down missing, one of her feet, all the bones were missing. And I'm assuming that was all animals. One of the dogs was deceased. The cats ended up all having to be put down because they were so dehydrated that they were in kidney failure. But one of the officers, I take the one living dog out, and he was a decent dog and stuff. And I get him in the kennel, and he was kind of licking my fingers. And the officer goes, "Are you gonna let him do that? You know, he's clearly got the taste of for human now." And I looked at him and I'm like, "Are you serious right now? Like, wow. That's not a thing." I said, "He's just happy to be out of there and being taken care of." I said, "Yes, I'm okay with him licking my fingers." that dog got adopted out, and needless to say, he now has severe separation anxiety. Mm. But yeah, so that was probably one of my weirdest ones. But like I said, I've helped remove the bodies because it's the coroner and one officer, and they're like, "Yeah, we can't lift this person."
Mm. Yeah, and they need a hand for sure. I mean, that makes sense. And I just think there's like, you know, I've seen, and it's like, we don't talk about it on this episode to like, we're not glorifying it, but like, no. This is what you're going to see when you're in this profession. You're going to see suicide. You're going to see homicide. You're going to see accidental death. You're going to see natural cause. Like, you are going to see that, and you got to be prepared for it in some aspects. I want to go back to my first body if I can remember. And it might be this one. There was a welfare check in North Denver. They could smell it. You know, neighbors could smell the body and whatnot. And we go in the home, and the coroner was wearing like a suit. He always wore a suit and dress shoes. And we're inside the home in the party.
Really?
He always wore a suit and dress shoes, always. And we're inside the home, and there were two dogs, two little dogs in there, and the deceased was on the couch sitting kind of in a sitting position. And for whatever I don't know what it is about deceased people, but I would say 70% of homes that I've gone into with a deceased party has been naked. And and so this party is naked, and the coroner's walking around doing the assessment, and they had to have been deceased for I would say a minimum a week, maybe longer. And it was in the summer, so it was warm and, you know, stinky. And all I remember is like, I'm watching the dog, trying to get the dog. And then I look over to him, the coroner, and he slips on like the body fluids, 'cause he's wearing dress shoes, and almost puts his hand. Like I would imagine it would have gone through the person's flesh, 'cause it was just so much disintegrated at that point. And I was like, and again, with all due respect to like the body and the family and the human, I was like, this is so flipping cool. Like I don't know why I'm drawn to like destruction and like death and all this dark stuff, but I just thought it was so neat, and to watch them deal with it and then have to like, you know, properly carry it and, you know, all that stuff was just amazing.
Well, you know, sitting here talking about that, I feel like part of the reason we may be intrigued by it is, first of all, how many of the serial killer podcasts, shows, whatever, they're out there. It's a thing. So you can be intrigued and interested by that stuff without being disrespectful to the families and stuff. So I think that's just a human nature. But I also feel like there's some scientific stuff there too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's that curiosity of the sciences of, okay, what would have happened if he would have put his hand on that person? Like you said, it probably would have gone through, but would it really? And to have actually been able to see that versus just trying to make that stuff up in your head. I don't know. I think there's that aspect that maybe is what is intriguing and why it really shouldn't be seen as us being disrespectful or anything like that.
And I don't think it is. I think truthfully, like if you do this job, you kind of have a taste for blood. And I know that sounds silly, and it's just after Halloween when this
what airs, were pit bulls?
Wow. But the reality is, like, if you can't see those, like I tell people all the time, if I could just do hoarding calls day to day to day to day to day to day, I would probably just do that. I love mm-hmm. chaos. I love mess. I love destruction and like just deplorable situations. I absolutely just love that stuff. And so for me, it's a kind of an aspect of like an overall, like you have to know going into this profession that you are going to see the blood and guts of things, whether it's animals, whether it's people, right? You're going to see it at some point and you have to be prepared for it.
Yeah. Well, and there's also the mindset of, okay, what was going through the person's head before some of this happened? Like even the hoarding cases and stuff. And, you know, you have, there's so many different things to figure out versus your barking dogs, your strays, you know, things like that. And maybe it's that we really like a challenge too.
We do.
I don't know, but I'm with you on that. I would much, if I could, I've always said that if I could go and be on the ASPCA's team, it used to be the fur team. I don't remember what it is anymore, but the one that deploys out for the hoarding, the cockfighting, the dog fighting rings. And if I could do just that,
mm-hmm.
I would absolutely love to. And maybe one day I will once my kids are older. I just don't want to deploy out that much.
That's just it, right? It's a traveling job. And I actually saw Leanne in North Carolina. She's we've had her on the show before with the ASPCA, so check her out previous episodes, and she talks about those deployments and things. So I mean, that does exist. And you know, there is an aspect of like, it's just, you know, it's human nature that some of us just have that innate, I think that innate like need to want to know more and understand more. And I think that's what makes a lot of us do this job, is mm-hmm. because we have that ability to do that. So, you know, there's just so much. And I think as we, you know, kind of transition now, we're getting towards the end of season three, you know, and we, you know, we'll come back for 2023, which will be season four. We don't take weeks off. You get 52 episodes a year, son. We just keep it moving. We're dedicated to really bringing you the content that, you know, is going to benefit you. I mean, you may not agree with everything that's on the show, and you may talk to yourself in your truck or your van when you're at work, like, I can't believe they said that. But that's the point, is we want to just make you think a little bit and have, you know, have that. So if you have any questions and want to reach out to the show, you can email us at daniel@humanemaine.com. You can call me 412-736-6263 or send a text message and we'll get your information out there. We really look forward to just continuing to bring this to you. You know, we have a few episodes left for the season. We're all booked up. We're actually booking into 2023 and we're just excited to bring the content to you. Cause I mean, that's the thing. If you've been doing this job for a long time, you've seen some stuff. There's no doubt. You've been in homes that are probably worse. And I find that interesting. I don't try to compare anymore. I just try to honestly, like when we have these conversations with our fellow peers, I just try to share, right? Mm-hmm. And say like, this is what I've done. And then I try to learn from whoever I'm talking to when I hear, but I've seen this from some people as they try to compare. And even in my old department, oh, that's not that bad. I've seen worse. Or, you know, and it's like, right. I'm not trying to compare. I'm just trying to show you my experiences. And I think we should value those. I think we should value those and really give people an opportunity to, like, because I think a lot of times people are just venting too, because you have to mm-hmm. be able, at the end of the day, you have to have somebody to talk about. Hey, you know, I went into this house today and I saw, like, I'll give a quick example before we go. It was a suicide and there was a cute kitten in the house, and I had to go in, and I remember the cop telling me, he's like, hey, just be aware the body's still there. It's kind of gruesome. And I'm like, okay. Like, but his gruesome, and I didn't disrespect the police officer, but his gruesome might be different than my gruesome. And I go in, and sure enough, there's a younger individual, like very good looking person. Like they didn't look like they were, like you couldn't tell that mm-hmm. there was something wrong. Like you can't, and that's the thing. And I'll pause really quick before I get to, back to the story, is a lot of times we're dealing with people and we don't know what they're going through. We don't know their past trauma ever. Right. And so
no matter how many times you've dealt with the person, you don't know what they're going through and going with, like what is happening that day in their mind.
100%. It's so important for us to be able to be patient and empathetic and understand. And we can talk about that on a different episode, but I want to go back to it. Cause when you looked on the surface of this individual who hung themselves with a tie around a doorknob, like it was the most, I never expected to see a suicide like this, where somebody was basically, they tied the tie so short to the door handle that they sat down and were able to take their own life that way. And when I stopped, and I literally stopped and kind of like looked and just tried to gather it in and just to like understand a little better. And you're thinking, like, on the surface, like this person looks like a great person. Like you have no idea, like I said, what they're going through. And then I get the kitten and I come out. And then they have all their friends, or the deceased's friends outside of the apartment, and they're in tears and like just going through it. And then you're thinking, like, and this person had a great network of people, like they were supportive clearly because they're there and like mm-hmm. and they're broken up about it. But again, you don't know what they're dealing with, right? And so like that was earlier on in my career too, and that was like a real eye opener as far as like, when we're out on scene, we really need to like take our time, be patient with people. And if there's ever an opportunity that you sense something else is going on, try to offer help, whether it's mm-hmm. just saying like, hey, if you want to talk, or if I can provide you resources, here's what I can do. And I think that's what's going to change our profession from being the dog catcher to what we really are. And, or for how people perceive us as the dog catcher to what we really are. And that's, you know, we're empathetic, we're resourceful, we're, I don't know what name we are, but we're there trying to help our community. And I think people would appreciate that.
Yeah. You asked me a question earlier. Do you have anything that you have a hard time going to?
There's not anything that I've had yet in my career that I had a hard time going to. I get really excited for every call that comes on the radio. And I'm not just saying that. I think the thing that would be really hard or difficult to me is a child abuse, child endangerment with the animal. I think that's yeah.
I was going to actually bring that up as well. I actually have a story about that. 2015, shortly after I had my girls, I had twins, first time mom. Very, very proud of the fact that I was able to breastfeed my twins for 2 years. And that's like a huge thing to me. And we had this little 4-year-old, mom calls in, you know, my 4-year-old took off, I can't find her. Officer goes out, finds the kid, calls mom and says, hey, kid's over here. Mom goes and gets the kid. And then officer goes back to the house to, you know, make sure things are cool in the house and everything's okay. Gets in and the house is in deplorable hoarding type condition. There was 10 cats. So of course, litter boxes not being used and things like that. Social services gets called and So in the house was a 4-year-old, a 9-month-old, and then some older kids. And social services comes in and removes them all. And what I really struggled with on that case was the 9-month-old had only ever been breastfed by mom. And so knowing that they were taking the baby from mom that night, I knew that baby was not going to eat for a couple of days because he didn't know how. He didn't know how to take a bottle.
Okay.
So
please tell me you just whipped it out.
No, that time I did not. However, if during that time had anything ever come up, would I have? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I would have had no problem with that. But the kids ended up in the hospital that night. The baby had a rash and some other things. So I knew that the baby would eventually be fine, but like knowing those kids were in that situation, the baby was going to be hungry for a while until he figured out that bottle and things like that. Though that one really hit me hard. But yeah, the kids' cases.
They're hard, you know, and I guess with the animal thing, because animals are hard too, but because we deal with it every day, like I guess I've grown more accustomed to it, if you will. Like I'm just able to deal with like...
You can compartmentalize the animals separate.
Yeah, but like babies, I don't know. It's just more difficult in that aspect. So I don't know. It's a good conversation. We could talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Forever?
For hours. Yeah, and I think ultimately it's just really important for our listeners to know whether you're a year in the game or you've been on the, you know, in the field for 20 plus is like, there's always something new that's going to hit you. I don't care who you are. You're going to go to a call where you're like, I ain't never seen that before. Right.
Or you can even go to a call that is absolutely routine. And just that day, depending on, again, whatever you have personally going on mentally that day. I had a cat that was starved and we ended up, it was a stray, I believe, but because of his just overall condition, it was determined we should put him down. Mm-hmm. And like, again, I've been doing this almost 20 years. I've been involved with euthanasia. It's not a huge mental toll on me. But this cat had food packed to the top of the roof of his mouth.
Oh, wow.
And when the vet was able to finally like unpack it, this was before he was euthanized, he like scrambled to get it back. And it was because he was so hungry. Mm. That one, I went home that day in tears because I was like, oh man, this cat literally died being hungry because we couldn't even help. Like we couldn't even give him a last meal because he couldn't get it down. He couldn't swallow or something. Something was wrong with him. And that one hit me. Been a part of things like that all day, every day, you know, no big deal. But that one hit me hard. So you can do the same thing every day and just have one of them randomly hit you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's end the show on a happy note. Because
yes,
especially like classes and stuff. I used to end certain classes with really horrible videos. And then I learned, I was like, yeah, I better not do that anymore because people just leave the class like all somber and stuff. So on a happy note, I just want to again shout out all the listeners, all the good people that are, you know, part of our, I would say just part of our profession, part of our movement, if you will. Like we really, I don't know, for me, and I can't speak for you specifically, Bishop, but I do this because I want to help more people. Like if we can help one, if one person listens to the podcast and has helped, like that's a benefit to me. And like, that's kind of how I look at it. I just want to make sure we're helping people, mm-hmm. helping our community grow and, you know, just sharing good positive vibes too, even amongst some of the negative things we see.
Yeah, absolutely. And same as always, guys, we're always out there. We're ready to listen and talk to you. Reach out to us.
HumaneMaine.com. Check it out. Email the show. call me 412-736-6263. Text me. I don't care. It's my, that's my personal number. I'm finally just putting it out there. Ain't going to bother me if I get, I already get spam call. Hi, this is Wendy from your vehicle insurance department or warranty. It's fine. I don't care. Also, big shout out to Derek Botorf. Derek Botorf is helping us out on the show. He's doing some editing behind the scenes, so I got to give him some love.
He's oh, that's why he added me shows. On Facebook?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, shout out, Derek. Thanks for the love, man. We appreciate you. You know, he's been listening to the show for a while, and I had some microphone issues with the Mercy for Animals podcast, and he heard it, and he was like, bro, this sounds like trash. I'm a fan. We need to fix this. And I was like, bet, whatever you want to do. And so he's hooking it up. So shout out, Derek. Thank you for helping us out, you know, one ACO to another. We appreciate the support. So if anybody else is out there and wants to do some stuff with the show, you know, social media, or just, again, come on as a guest, humanemaine.com. Check it out. Reach out. And remember to share, like, and rate us.
Share and like and
rate. Share and rate us?
Share and rate us.
Like, wait. Hey, I like that.
Share and
like
and rate us.
Thanks for listening. Thanks again, Code 3, for coming on today. Janae, feel better. And with that, we'll say keep it
humane.
Maine.